I want to now get into a very nerve-wracking subject that will cause many to feel extremely sensitized towards. I'm not a person of rigidity. I am okay with changing my views and my lifestyles if the evidence shows that how I view life and the specific ways that I live life are erroneous, as well as ridiculous. I do not mean to cause an us versus them. That is what I am not trying to achieve. I'm not an us versus them kind of person, but I'm going to say this is the last part of my rocky history with religion, for sure. And I truly mean it this time. I said in other episodes, I know, and I kept saying it after that. I don't deadline myself. I don't even hurry myself up. This is what I will say. I don't have any more complaints about religion after this, because this explains it all, summarizes it all in terms of my compassionate concerns regarding piety. So let's get to this. This is written by Stacy Patton, published March 25th, 2017, 11:30 p.m. Coordinated Universal Time, UTC. Salon.com. I'll bust you in the head till the white meat shows. Stand-up comedy, black families, and corporal punishment. Black comedians from prior to Bernie Mac have transformed the childhood trauma of corporal punishment into laughs. Now, before I go any further, I think Chris Tucker is funny. I think Richard Pryor's funny. I think Bernie Mac are funny. A lot of their routines have me in stitches. I have nothing against Bernie Mac at all. I have nothing against Richard Pryor at all. I have nothing against Chris Tucker at all. Anytime I bring up a celebrity in any of my episodes, in this case, in the world of entertainment and music, there's no vendetta, no envy, no jealousy. I'm not warring against them at all. Excerpted from Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America by Stacy Patton, Beacon Press 2017, reprinted with permission from Beacon Press. Humor masks some painful truths about growing up black in America. While often lamenting the realities of racism, the persistence of white privilege, and the daily battles of existing while black, Much of Black comedy explores the more personal challenges facing our communities, particularly when it comes to child rearing. Black comedy also captures how Black people cope with the pain inflicted onto us by white America and the pain we inflict on ourselves. Now, before I go any further, white does not mean all white persons. We are only talking about the ones that are racist. We're never talking about the white people that are anti-racist. In fact, anti-racist white people are awesome. And when I say Black, I'm not talking about all Black people. There are plenty of Black people who do not whip their children. And when we're talking about the ones who do, we're calling them in, not out. And in the episodes I do, I don't call people out. I call people in. I call people in that I am in agreement with. And I call people in who I'm not in agreement with. I call people in who I agree with and who I disagree with. Nobody's called out. Everybody's called in. If we really listen to the jokes Black comedians have told us about the struggles of parenting, what emerges is a dystopian hellscape where parents resent their children even before they draw their first breath, where children are routinely threatened by their parents in an attempt to get them to quote-unquote act right in a white world waiting to crush them. Without most of us realizing it, Black comedy provides yet another cultural reminder to Black children that because the world is a dangerous and racist place, parents must hurt them to get them ready for it. Many stand-up acts are little more than Black men confessing their childhood traumas and brutalization of their own children. Again, I want to say this. I think Kevin Hart is funny. A lot of his routines I like. I have nothing against him at all. Kevin Hart jokes about punching his 9-month-old daughter in the throat for wanting juice. Bernie Mac declared, "I will fuck a kid up." Bruce advises parents to set the tone for their child's day. As soon as your kid wakes up, beat them because they've done something wrong. Again, I've seen Bruce stand up act. He's funny to me, and I have nothing against him. And again, I have nothing against Chris Tucker. I liked his movies. I like his movies. He's funny. Nothing against him. And one more time, I never call anybody out. I always call everybody in. Reflecting back on his childhood in his 2015 film, Chris Tucker Live, the comedian said, "My father beat us like slaves." And then he described how he and his brother were ordered to go into the basement, strip naked, and spread over a couch while their father whooped them with a strap. The underlying message from these comedians is that for Black children, their very existence is a source of constant irritation to their parents. Requests for food, attention, toys, and information, all normal child behaviors are met with scorn and violence. Before our children have their innocence destroyed by their first direct experiences with racism, each developmental milestone is met with Black parents diminishing them through shame, ridicule, physical force and even the threat of being taken out of this world by the people who brought them into it. There's even violence in the nurturing of our children when they are physically injured or sick. Richard Pryor said that after his grandmother whooped him with a switch, she treated his wounds with a cotton ball and peroxide, and then promised to whoop him again if he acted up. His audience responded in laughter. Black comedians also jest about how, quote unquote, soft today's children are because they cannot withstand poverty, illness, injuries, or painful beatings from adults. The overarching message is that Black children should expect no empathy or kindness in the world, even from their closest relatives. Again, I think Bernie Mac and Richard Pryor are funny people. They make me laugh. Nothing against them. What I'm doing is sharing concerns for many of us in the Black community. And yet we laugh at these messages. We find humor in the pain. And we use this entertainment in an effort to persuade ourselves that we turned out just fine. But what's most disturbing about our laughter is that it demonstrates our inability to recognize that there's something fundamentally wrong with beating a child until, quote unquote, the white meat shows, as Bernie Mac famously threatened his nieces and nephews. The audience's laughter tells us that the whoopings we received have made us numb to our own pain and immune to the continued violence we witness. We have either suppressed our negative childhood experiences or obliterated them from our minds so that we cannot empathize with our children's pain and vulnerability. Consider the Peabody Award-winning The Bernie Mac Show, an upper-middle-class Black family sitcom that aired on Fox from 2001 to 2006. Mac plays a loving but gruff and exasperated uncle whose childless, picture-perfect life with his wife is interrupted when they agree to take custody of his drug-addicted sister's three children. Real quick, I want to say, for the last time in this episode, everyone's called in, no one's called out. And I do not like stigmatizing precious human beings who are unfortunately wrestling with drug addiction. That's the kindest way to put it for me. Here we go. The premise of the sitcom was based on Mac's own life, and he incorporated it into a legendary routine in the very popular stand-up comedy film, The Original Kings of Comedy. I do want to add this. I enjoy the Bernie Mac show because of a lot of the episodes that they have. And I have nothing against the cast nor anybody who was ever on that show. I'm just, again, sharing the concerns of many in my community. I got three fucking new kids in my life, he gripes to the mostly Black audience, which roars with laughter. As he ticks off their ages, 2, 4, and 6, the audience collectively groans. With a mother who became more and more neglectful as she fell deeper into her addiction, Life had been bad for his two nieces and nephew. They were going to end up in foster care if Mac didn't step in. It wasn't surprising that they had their own emotional baggage when they arrived at their uncle's home. Mac describes them as if they are pathological street urchins. The two-year-old, he says, is the bossy, cunning one, a little heifer, in quotations, and the ringleader who, quote-unquote, works for the devil. Mac makes fun of the four-year-old's wide-eyed expression, speech delay, and constant rocking, developmental disabilities caused by her mother smoking crack while pregnant. She don't talk, she don't say shit, all she do is just look at you, he says while widening his eyes as the audience cackles. He says he told the child that if a fire breaks out in the house, she better have a whistle or something. I ain't got no time to be looking for no deaf mute motherfucker. Now, I don't mind people not finding these people funny, especially in the light of the conversation and what was said and quoted. I'm not disrespecting anybody's sensitivities because this conversation is what I choose to have with the whole world. And the reason why some of the language on here is rough I dare say, in my case, I have to be honest. Usually I don't use that kind of language on my show. Nor in my real life, not now, I really don't. But there are times where we have to tell the uncensored truths so people can have positive shock value. Mac then calls the effeminate six-year-old boy a faggot, the first one in the family whose sexuality hurt my heart. Dead. When the boy cries or wets himself, Mac tells him to quote-unquote act like a man. When Mac tells the two-year-old, who has snuck into the kitchen to get milk and cookies, that she can't have any, he says the child looked at him as if she wanted a piece of him, so he squared up in a boxing stance for a fight. The message here is that black children should not ask for food or want for anything, that they should make themselves invisible, and that they are never too young for an adult beating. Throughout the stand-up act, Matt cusses at the kids and repeatedly calls them some of them a bitch, motherfucker, and punk ass. He admits to the laughing audience that he constantly fought back the urge to call the children other names like you ugly son of a bitch, and you stupid motherfucker, you. Other punchlines also evoke wild laughter from the audience. Fuck that timeout shit. These kids bad. When a kid gets 1 year old, I believe you have a right to hit them in the throat or stomach. Now, this is rough for me to say and to read to you, so even though I'm sounding the way I'm sounding, you can hear it in my voice that this is disturbingly unpleasant. And when I say somebody's funny, I'm not diminishing the pain. I'm balancing the views of many and the views of myself. In terms of, I don't want to create a wedge of war between anybody, but at the same time, this is a much needed conversation, as well as much needed transformation. It is difficult for me to laugh at that line, given what I know about child abuse statistics. Children under age one are the most vulnerable victims of abuse, accounting for around 40% of all fatalities from abuse and neglect in this country. The majority of children who die from physical abuse are under age two, and studies show that Black parents have reported spanking, yelling at children as young as 4 months, with the frequency increasing as the child gets older. And that same stand-up act, Matt jokes about opening a daycare center where parents can send their badass kids in quotations to receive 3 months of free service. There would be no need for secret cameras because he promises to be transparent about his disciplinary practices. He says that if a mother picked up her child had a knot on his head and she asked, "What happened to my son?" he would answer, "I took a hammer and slapped the fuck out of him." Max's language would be cleaned up for his television show, though the violence still resonates. In the opening scene of the pilot episode, Mac looks at the camera and says, "I'm going to kill one of them kids. Don't get me wrong, I love them. I know what you're going to say, Bernie Mac cruel. Bernie Mac beats his kids. I don't care. That's your opinion." Max's classic threat to the children is out busting the head to the white meat shows. That line is akin to another oft-repeated threat from Black parents, "I'll slap the black off you." His child-rearing tactics eventually get him in trouble when one of the children calls social services. Throughout the show, he defends his disciplinary practices by explaining that he is trying to instill respect in the children. As one TV reviewer wrote in 2001, "The Bernie Mac Show is a quote-unquote brutal view of how a dysfunctional family might be made to function again. From Bernie Mac's perspective, that means employing strict rules, verbal abuse, and corporal punishment to teach the values of personal responsibility and self-respect. What raises so much of the pain is seeing Bernie Mac attempt to instill these values in children whose young lives have already been damaged, perhaps beyond healing. This idea that traumatized children who had rough beginnings can be fixed with a good butt whooping," in quotations, also appears in Tyler Perry's 2002 play, Medea's Family Reunion, which was later adapted into a 2006 movie. The no-nonsense Medea, who was played by the cross-dressing Perry, fosters an angry and rebellious runaway whom she whoops with a belt, even though corporal punishment of foster children is generally prohibited by state agencies. One of the classic themes in all Black parental comedy is to compare these kids today with the previous generation. Popular comedian D.L. Hughley, whose adult son has Asperger's syndrome, quips that, quote unquote, "Kids these days got diseases I ain't never even fucking heard of. I'm bipolar. That means I have two different personalities. We could have never told our mothers any shit like that. Mom, I'm bipolar. Well, both you motherfuckers go in there and clean that goddamn room." For Hughley, good parenting meant a teething child got a face-numbing dose of whiskey on the gums. Mothers chewed and sucked the juice out of pork chops to feed their babies. And a child left alone in a hot car should never set foot outside the car for cooler air, lest they get a whooping for being defiant. Like Mac, Hughley paints a picture of babies who come into the world cursing and of mentally ill toddlers whose presence is neither desirable nor worthy of celebration. Children are a source of constant need. Warranting adult violence from domineering and uncaring black parents. From domineering and uncaring black parents. Another recurring theme in black parental comedy is the denials of, I'm sorry, let me read this correctly. But let me, before I do that, I have nothing against Tyler Perry. I think he's a gifted man. I don't mind people not feeling him, not feeling his body of work, especially in light of what I said regarding the sensitivities of the episodes that we're doing in particular being done. Another recurring theme in black parental comedy is the denial of feelings to children, especially those who have just been whooped. One of his routines, Arnaz J. turns his microphone into an extension cord and dangles it at a white woman in the audience, reminding her that she doesn't know anything about being whooped with an extension cord, Hot Wheels tracks, or Christmas tree lights. He jokes, "Welcome to our world, white people." He recalls being hit so hard that his mother knocked the sound out of him. After the whooping, he was sent to his room to calm down, only to be brought back to receive an explanation. Still whimpering and trying to adjust back to normal, he struggles to speak fast enough about what caused the parental wrath. His silence compels intervention as his parent beats him again. The moral of the story is made clear as Jay announces, "Ain't nothing wrong with beating your kids. Most of us were beaten. We turned out fine." The audience applauds. Black parents' threats to beat their children till they can't grow anymore subconsciously echoes the larger societal attitudes about black children's inevitable passage into adulthood. Such a message says, "I'm so terrified and feel so inadequate about parenting you through puberty, and I so want to attack the part of you that's growing up." In one of his routines, Mike Epps continually riffs on how black mothers deal with their sassy teenage daughters entering puberty. You know, those black mothers love jumping on their daughters. They got their little rival thing. He makes it plain. If a daughter gets smart with her mother, the mother should smack her and threaten to knock her head between the washer and dryer. Black mothers love to do that first jump off, Epps says. After the beating, Epps says the mother then calls a friend to shame the daughter. "I had to knock Shanika's motherfucking. I tried to kick that bitch all behind the damn washer and dryer." He notes how the mother further shames her daughter by discussing her sexual development with others. "I guess because she got titty, she thinks she running something around here. I'd let her know, buy your own tampons. So you can buy your own tampons. Don't say a motherfucking thing. They'll say a motherfucking thing to me." This is yet another example of how children, in this case, a daughter who has entered puberty, are perceived as threats to parents. And they must be beaten down for, quote unquote, getting too big for their britches. What Epps depicts is a scene where a teenager is denied privacy, denied the sanctity of experiencing a healthy progression into womanhood, and shamed for it with a beating and gossip and for her inability to purchase her own tampons. In comparing black and white parenting styles, Epps also says that black parents will beat their kids anywhere, church, the parking lot, court, describing a disrespectful white male teenager, describing a disrespectful white male teenager who cusses at his mother, threatens to kill both parents, and spends his free time in the garage making bombs with no investigation from the parents. He depicts white parents as too permissive, and that has deadly consequences. White people, your kids will kill you, Epps proclaims, adding that white parents don't beat their children and give them too much unsupervised time alone in their homes. The more responsible black mother has quote-unquote instincts like she's in Vietnam. She will ask questions when her child is spending too much time quiet alone in their room. She will ask questions when her child is spending too much quiet time alone in their room. According to this logic, permissiveness and the lack of beatings leads to white pathology, whether it is back talk or mass shootings. But whoopings in the black community lead to respect and civility. Black parents criticize white parents for being quote-unquote permissive and latch on to a sense of moral superiority because they would never let their children behave quote-unquote like those little white children. The truth is that what spells freedom for white parents and their children is not having a history of racial dehumanization and violence. It is immunity from widespread studies, media images, and stereotypes that demonize black parents, and blame them for social ills inside and outside of the black community. It is the ability to live in a society where, as a white parent, you don't have to teach your child what to do with their hands when confronted by a cop or how to live in constant racial terror. Black parents work overtime to rein in their children early on because there's nothing outside the family unit that can protect them from the countless threats and blows of racism. Watch the different ways that small black children and small white children move through public spaces. The black children are seen by everyone as a nuisance, as unruly and threatening. And so their parents work to clamp down on their behavior, grooming them to be small, silent, and as close to invisible as possible to avoid attracting trouble. White children are imbued with racial swagger from day one. The sense not only that they belong and have a right to an expansive presence in any environment, but that they are deserving and important and in charge. It's easy to see why black comedians are so outspoken about our child-rearing practices. Comedy, and more recently social media, are really the only vehicles that black people have to critique racism and white privilege, and within that, white parenting and child rearing. After all, white people are constantly demonizing black parenting as the source of violence and other problems in our communities. So we return the favor by insisting that we must beat our children to keep them from growing up to be bombers and mass shooters like white kids, even though there's no evidence that black kids are at risk of committing such crimes. Comedy can also be a source of recognizing. It can spotlight truths and force us to confront our trauma. Unlike the other famous comedians I've discussed, Richard Pryor, who in his 1979 live and concert film vividly described being whooped by his grandmother, offered insight to a child's memory of the pain. My grandmother is the lady who disciplined me, beat my ass. She would say, Richard, go get something so I can beat your ass with it. He described being ordered to get a switch off a tree and snatching the leaves off of it before getting whooped with it. I see them trees today. I will kill one of the motherfuckers. He pretended to stop a car, get out, and try to twist and yank the tree out of the ground so that it will never grow up to beat anybody. You won't be beating nobody's ass. That's some hell of a psychology to make you go get a switch to beat your own ass with it. Pryor then chronicled the long, scary walk back into the house, cutting the wind with the switch as he yanked it back and forth in his hand. He listened to its distinctive whistle-like sound. He hoped for snow or that his grandmother would have a heart attack so she couldn't whoop him, and then proceeded to dance around on the stage as if he was getting whooped. While Pryor's routine is a source of humor for many, it also forces us to confront our fear, trauma, and pain resulting from whoopings. Though he told this story in a funny way, he didn't celebrate the whoopings or defend the practice. Instead, he confessed how he wanted to grow up and destroy trees so they wouldn't bear switches that could be plucked off and used as weapons on other children. He wanted to break the cycle of violence. He didn't speak from the patriarchal abusive position of inflicting pain on a smaller person. He actually infantilized himself to show us the unfairness and fear from a child's perspective. The sights and sounds, his crying and whining and screaming and begging, and his reenactment are so visceral. While it's uncommon, Pryor's not the only comedian to use the stage to disrupt the whooping narrative. Former child comedian Lil JJ, now 25, offered a subversive routine at Harlem's Apollo Theater in which he carried forth Pryor's truth-telling about being whooped as a child. Like Pryor, he brings the audience to a space in their minds where they can recall what it really felt like to experience the fear of being hit. As he takes the stage, Lil JJ, 14 at the time, tells the audience, "I want to talk to y'all grown folks." He proceeds to mock the adults for saying that they're always talking about how, quote unquote, kids today are so bad, how much they lie. "Y'all be lying too," he says, tickling off examples like the Easter Bunny, Tooth Fairy, Santa, and the Boogeyman. "Y'all be lying when y'all whooping us." While pretending to be a parent spanking a child, he laments the ultimate lie parents tell, that they are whooping the child because they love them. "You not whooping us because you love us, you whooping me because you mad." As he pauses to punctuate every word with the simulation of a hit, the audience has little choice but to confront his words and the ways that violence penetrates his body with pain. What's brilliant about Lil JJ's routine is that he speaks from a child's perspective, all while pointing out that parents who whoop their kids do so not from a space of love or virtue. He's able to show that kids are just like adults and they behave the way adults teach them. His message is that children and adults are the same, but when a parent whoops a child for committing the very infractions that adults have failed to master, they are actually beating out of their child the negative parts of themselves that they are ashamed of. I know that was a lot of meat. I don't do milk. But I've known white parents who whoop their kids. Whoopings are in every community. I spotlighted the black community because whoopings were the most common in the black community I was raised in. I only got a handful of whoopings growing up. Less than five, but I'm not demonizing anybody's pain. I'm just being honest about what I was remembering. I may have been taught false reasons not to get whooped. It was more about I was afraid of adults growing up. That's what I mean. My sense of morality was false to an extent because of the adults. That's what I'm trying to say. Some of my acting positive was because of fear. So I behaved the way adults wanted me to because of fear to some extent. Mostly because of courage. There were fearful parts of the morality. I am against corporal punishment. I think it should be abolished everywhere. That's my personal stand. And I was whooped by rapists in adult black female bodies, the very same rapists who raped me. They use their hands and their belts. To physically abuse me. And I do not like, I hate, and I despise, and I detest, and I loathe the racism that many black people throw at white people when it comes to stereotyping white children and stereotyping white parents. I do not like the racist stereotyping of white child rearing and white parenthood. To be fair, I do not like, I detest, I loathe, I hate, and I despise the stereotyping of black parenthood, the stereotype of black rearing, black parenting, black children. But I will say that every word that I read to you in this article written by Stacey Pattern, I 100% agree with her on every word that she said. She is 100% right and she is 0% wrong. I think Mike Epps is a gifted person, and I have nothing against him. But the things that they have, that all these comedians have said, I abhor. Abhor. I abhor. I can recognize people as human beings, but find some of their lifestyles, behaviors, and words problematic. I like little JJ's truth-telling routine, including Richard Pryor's. Also, I am just dismayed at the audience for being insensitive and desensitized. Not all jokes are worth applauding, and not all jokes are worth cackling either. To sum up this article, I'll just read her words. His message is that children and adults are the same. He's able to show that kids are just like adults and they behave the way adults teach them. But when a parent whoops a child for committing the very infractions that adults have failed to master. They are actually beating out of their child the negative parts of themselves that they are ashamed of. Why? What's brilliant about Lil JJ's routine is that he speaks from a child's perspective, all while pointing out that parents who whoop their kids do so not from a space of love or virtue. I'm going to move on to another article. Ebony.com. Culture and Black Life Family / Parenting Spare the Kids. Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. Sylvia Snowden, January 19, 2017. We've all seen it, the two-year-old who has fallen out, kicking and screaming in the middle of a store, or the mouthy, defiant teenager who's rolling her eyes and her neck at everything. It's easy to look at kids like that and think, that kid needs is a good butt whooping. According to a 2015 Pew Research survey, Black parents are more than twice as likely as white parents, nearly twice as likely as Hispanic parents, to use corporal punishment to discipline their children on a regular basis. Black parents are also far less likely than white or Hispanic parents to never spank their children. And that's the sort of parenting pathology that Dr. Stacy Patton hopes to combat. Dr. Stacy Patton is a Black woman. Patton, who holds a PhD in African American history and is the author of a new book, Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America, urges Black parents to look at the history and the impact of the practice and reconsider. Ebony.com sat down with Dr. Patton for an in-depth look at her findings. Ebony, why do you think we hit our children? Dr. Stacy Patton, people think that hitting a child is a form of teaching. We think it will protect them. And people grow up to invert the violence they experience as children as something that was good, particularly in African American culture. As a people, we attribute our success to having had our bodies processed through violence. And quite frankly, what it does is confirm a long-standing racist narrative about Black bodies. The only way to control us, the only way to make us quote unquote good, law-abiding, moral people is with a good whooping. It seems that we unconsciously agree with that narrative. Ebony, you said in your book that Black people are the most locked up, unhealthy, stressed out, demonized group of people in America. Whooping children hasn't saved us from any of this. So why do you think we believe it has? Dr. Stacy Patton, we don't make the connection between historical traumas, the science that talks about the psychological damage that hitting children has, the chronic illnesses that get produced by hitting children, the domestic violence between Black men and Black women, or the shootings in the streets. We don't take a moment to stop and look and say, how much of that is attributed to what's happened to us in the foundational moment of our lives, which is childhood? We don't make those connections. Ebony, you also explore the Black church in your book. You say the church has always urged parents to use, quote unquote, the rod of correction. But then you point out that the phrase spare the rod, spoil the child isn't actually in the Bible. And Jesus was a gentle person who liked children. Would Jesus spank? Where do we get that from? Dr. Stacy Patton, firstly, I should say that I'm not a Christian, though I was raised in a Black church. In the New Testament, there's no evidence whatsoever that Jesus hit children. Based on Jesus' principles of empathy, love, and his directive to adults on how to treat children, I don't think he would have whooped a child. The whole spare the rod, spoil the child misinterpretation is Old Testament. I pushed this conversation a little further to say, listen, first of all, African Americans have only been Christians for about 200 years, and we came to Christianity through our brutal, horrible, and dark mistreatment during slavery. There's absolutely no evidence that Black people in West Africa treated their children with this kind of ritualistic violence prior to contact with European missionaries. We need to interrogate this theology. Ebony, talk about the specific damage we do to our male and female children when we hit them. I'll add LGBTQI plus children to be all-inclusive in this sensitive matter that we're exploring, lovingly exploring. Dr. Stacy Patton, I've interviewed Black men to learn if there was any connection between mothers beating their sons as boys and how they grew up to treat women later in life. I found that many of their stories confirmed what the psychological literature had been saying for decades. These men grow up to have some really ugly attitudes towards women. I also find it striking that we don't live in a society that believes that Black males experience pain. Far too many mothers look at their boys, particularly as their bodies grow, just as the larger racist society does, and see their potential criminality. I've talked to mothers who say, if I don't beat my son, he's going to knock me down someday. And so anti-Blackness is filled into the ways that some Black mothers rear their sons. Ebony, what should parents with a three-year-old whose mind hasn't developed enough to understand reason, or a 16-year-old who's rebelling? Dr. Stacy Patton, we have to deconstruct our thinking about Black children. That's half the battle right there. We have to throw away the fear. We have to throw away the cultural conditioning and the racist ideas about Blackness. Parents must educate themselves in child development. What's happening in your child's brain at 2 years old? We need a public health program that teaches parents why their child is hitting, why a child fights, and why a teenager may begin to suck her teeth. We are too inclined to think of a child as being willful when they're actually not. Parents also have to reconnect with their own humanity. There's this sort of intuitive response to beat out of their children the same things that were beaten out of them. Meaning the parents. Every word she said, Dr. Stacy Patton says, I strongly agree with. I do not think Jesus would have used corporal punishment on children. And she's right. We are misinterpreting the Old Testament when it comes to spare the rod, spoil the child, because she's right. It's not in there. That phrase is not in there. The rod of correction, the church has gotten that wrong, especially the Black church. She says so perfectly, I agree. And I hate that Black parents are the most into corporal punishment. I hate that. Let me read this to you. Why Whooping Your Kids Won't Save Black America by Antoine Heron. March 21st, 2017. WearYourVoiceMag.com. The origins of whooping Black children are sinister. Beating the barbarity out of a Black children is a trusted tool in the well-stocked arsenal of white supremacy. Content warning, discussion of child abuse. Interrogating the most controversial and taboo aspects of Black culture in the name of radical love is kind of my thing. It's also assistant professor of multimedia journalism and journalist Stacy Patton's thing, which is why I readily accepted the offer to read and as best I can review her new book, Spare the Kids, Why Whooping Children Won't Save Black America. A 247-page distillation of her painful sojourn to find the intellectual and emotional foundation of corporal punishment in Black America. But that's not the only reason I wanted to read it. Let me set the context. I'm a survivor of child abuse and domestic violence. I do not remember much about what happened. Maybe it's best that way. Some memories are too painful, too dangerous, too psychologically jarring to hold on to and relive. Removed from my biological mother's custody at age 4 or 5, I nearly ended up shuffled in the Indiana foster care system. As fate would have it, I was entrusted to the guardianship of my great-grandmother, the main elder on my mother's side of the family, whom we affectionately called Mama. Years after raising her own daughter, Mama had taken in and cared for multiple generations of Black children, guiding them as best she could to adulthood. That included administering physical discipline, even on me, the last in line to be signed to her care after, as the family story goes, I was found bloody and beaten on the floor of my biological mother's bedroom and rushed to the hospital. Like most Black kids, particularly those who grew up in predominantly African-American low-income communities, major cities and metropolitan areas that, because of their huge Black demographic, are quarantined from state aid, my formative experiences consisted of receiving frequent whoopings and, from the adults who administered them, vague reassurances that whoopings were an expression of love. No weapon was off limits. Belts, fists, switches, extension cords, threats with pots and pans, verbal lashings, all of these methods was fair game. In fact, it wasn't uncommon to hear Mama threatening to knock, quote unquote, my skinny Black ass upside the head with her four-legged walking cane if I didn't, quote unquote, get my shit together and act like I got some damn sense. Privately, in my own headspace, I harbored doubts. And I suspect that many of the other kids I knew did too. Occasionally, mine would filter out in the form of two questions, always asked back to back through unwiped snot and hot tears. What did I do? Why am I being whooped? I never got an answer. And as the years went on, I never expected to get one. Because in most Black households, it's taboo to question a parent, guardian, or adult's decision or authority. Doing so can potentially put you at more risk, invite more scorn and rage, and possibly intensify the parent's violent reaction. Don't ask me no damn questions, my child self remembers before the belt strap came crashing down. Even long after childhood, as an undergraduate student, I encountered more people who justified whoopings and praised them as an alterable staple of Black culture, like soul food. Still, I knew something was wrong off kilter, even if I didn't possess the language or concepts to articulate my frustrations at the time. I knew it was wrong to normalize corporal punishment as one of the surest signs of a healthy Black family. I knew that the adults around me didn't defend beating your kids in their eyes. That was unethical. Whoopings, on the other hand, was and still is viewed as an entirely different, more tame species of physical discipline altogether. It is with this psychological backlog in mind that I dived into Spare the Kids, searching not only for answers but emotional substantiation. I walked away with all the above. As a matter of fact, if I'm really being honest, I never left the book. Patton's prognosis of the problems derived from the intersection of racism, Black parenting, corporal punishment, and her connection of whoopings to all the other forms of violence Black people must wind their bodies through is truly one of the best pieces of interdisciplinary scholarship I engaged with in some time. As a student of African American history, it didn't surprise me that whoopings had its origins in slavery. I know that nothing within Black history, including the genesis of Black parenting, exists in a void and rarely without precedent. Aware of this, I relish the historical chapters as linking of past to present, because I'm all about the scholar activist deferring to the past to illuminate the current period we're living through. For indeed, if whoopings are for the most part an unchallenged and for this reason a moved convention in Black families, that Black parents still view with every ounce and fiber of their being the act of inflicting violence on the bodies of their children as a preventative measure, if Black adults still view whoopings as a necessary evil to save the existence of the entire race, then consulting the past in order to find the roots of this practice is imperative. And like every other issue, microaggressions and the systemic failures Black individuals and families must navigate on a daily basis, the propensity for practicing corporal punishment on the bodies of Black youth is inseparably connected to racism, to white supremacy, and Patton points out racial trauma in quotations. What I did not take for granted is how central whooping Black youth is to maintaining the myth of racial inferiority or its influence on modern school disciplinary culture, nor did I allow for how beatings affected Black gender relations or the psych or the physiological development of young prepubescent Black girls. Patton, a survivor of child abuse with an appreciation for nuance, clarifies all this for readers. She avoids the pitfalls of the one-dimensional blame game by fusing together the insight of multiple academic disciplines, sociology, psychology, neuroscience, to flesh out her claims about the vast and penetrating consequences of beating Black kids. Yet the progressive flow, the increasing clarification of the story and argument from beginning to end is seamless. That story is of a people who are stripped of their West African native cultures that value kids as little gods and were forced to adopt a European culture that conceptualized childhood as an invention of the devil and consequently beat, tormented, and tortured their youth. From here, Black slaves and their descendants would internalize European parenting methods until over time, through uninterrupted replication, Black adults, parents, and caregivers intricately threaded corporal punishment into the fabric of Black identity. Today, influential and famous Black people, iconic athletes, comedians like Charles Barkley and the late Bernie Mac, ordinary Black mothers and anonymous Black neighbors defend the cultural mythology of whoopings as innate to Black existence. Patton issues the scholarly comeuppance they deserve, emphasizing the impact of physical discipline on child's developing brain and what that suggests about the life prospects of Black youth, both dragging these individuals over the coils at times and gently escorting them at others, always from a place of genuine understanding, always in the spirit of transformative love. However, Pat makes it clear that Black parents and advocates of whippings do not hurt or beat their kids out of malice or some primordial genetic deformity. Thus, she is not out to bash Black parents who, like my great-grandmother, did the best they could with the tools they had. No, the origins of whippings are something more sinister. Beating the barbarity out of Black children that is a trusted tool in the well-stocked arsenal of white supremacy. Patton's focus on history, which appears early in the book, is by far one of my favorite parts of Spare the Kids, for it bears on important questions pertaining to my interest in excavating the complicated origins of culture. My other favorite, it's a toss-up between Chapter 9, The Parent-to-Prison Pipeline, a thesis which is almost certain to rub some readers the wrong way because it appears to flirt with victim blaming. It isn't. And the final chapter, which wraps up her investigation on a hopeful note. Chapter 10, Spare the Rod, a compilation of the personal testimonies of Black parents who stopped hitting and beating their kids, is meant to prove that it's possible for Blacks to eject corporal punishment from Black culture. At a time when some writers tend to disabuse themselves of the notion of hope, Patton embraces the kind of heart-scrabble optimism and patience needed to persevere as a child activist. The voices highlighted in this chapter of mothers and fathers who weaned themselves off whoopings underscore why. Reading their words made me realize how much I wish someone had produced this book 25 or so years ago. The most important aspect of the work, I feel, is the stated function of why, from Patton's perspective, it needs to exist. Patton is not just out to merely enlighten readers or impart a deeper comprehension of the role of whooping in the devaluation of Black lives. Whoopings jeopardize Black progress and feed white supremacy. That much is clear. Her mission, however, is to help stop it. What can we do, as she puts it, to save lives? I want to write a book that could eventually save other children from the abuse I experienced, Patton writes. Indeed, it can, I believe that, but only if enough adults who are directly and indirectly involved in and responsible for raising and supporting and loving on the lives of Black children take the freedom of Black youth advocated and spare the kids seriously and see it as instrumental to Black liberation. That will be hard, because asking Black parents in the Black community to reevaluate whooping as a cultural practice may come off as a referendum on Black culture and a defense of the thesis of Black pathology, when it's anything but. Consider this example. A few days after receiving Patton's book in the mail for review, one of my own family members, glancing at the title from a distance, rolled her eyes, scrunched her face, looked up at me and blurted, "Who wrote that? Is they Black? Whoever it is, don't know what the hell they're talking about." Mind you, she hadn't read a single page of the text. That's just a small taste of what will likely be the collective Black backlash from the Black community. Black dissenters, myself included, who are already on board with replacing whoopings with alternative non-hitting methods of discipline, must keep this in mind as they brace themselves to discuss and help spread the ideas of this work and plead with Black adults to withdraw from the practice of hitting their kids. I, for one, cannot stress enough how grateful and appreciative I am to Patton for this work, for equipping Black people and everyone else who oppose corporal punishment with the tools to make a meaningful difference and end this madness. Spare the Kids is essential reading for anyone interested in the framework for ending the cycle of abuse and trauma Black children are forced to endure by the people who are supposed to care for them the most. It's almost certain to become the Bible of this new and growing movement toward adopting non-hitting child disciplinary options and reclaiming our pre-colonial roots. I will say this. I oppose all forms of physical discipline. I oppose physical discipline. I oppose all forms of corporal punishment. I oppose the corporal punishment. I think physical discipline and all forms of physical discipline should be abolished everywhere. I think all forms of corporal punishment and corporal punishment should be abolished everywhere too. I am on board with replacing whoopings with alternative non-hitting methods of discipline myself. Again, I'm already on board with replacing whoopings with alternative non-hitting methods of discipline personally myself. I want to end this madness and equip Black people and all kinds of people with tools to make a meaningful difference. I do not defend the cultural mythology of whoopings as innate to Black existence. Never have, never will. I think beatings do affect Black gender relations. I think that there's a physiological development of young pubescent Black girls, and beatings may affect that too. I've always felt that whooping Black youth is maintaining the myth of racial inferiority, as well as its sad influence on modern school disciplinary culture. I hate corporal punishment everywhere. Schools, home, churches, court, everywhere it's done, I hate it. I do understand that there are some kids who misbehave. They need trained professionals. And they need trained experts. They need one more thing. People who are able to speak life into them as they see fit, as they need it. I'm not bashing corporal punishment users, I'm not bashing one group of people, I'm not bashing anybody. I don't think whoopings are more tamed species of physical discipline. I think it is wrong to normalize corporal punishment as one of the sure signs of a healthy black family. I feel that way. I hate it when people justify whoopings. I hate it when people praise whoopings as an inalterable staple of black culture. I hate that. The whole don't question, I hate that. All communication should be respectful, but I hate the whole adultism, adult supremacy. Hate that. I hate our false sense of black unity, because a lot of us defend black child abusers and black adult abusers, and we want to appease these people. I think that is severely fucked up. Because when we say don't question, that's like saying so-and-so is your uncle. You just met them. And the parent says, that's your uncle, against your will, right? That's instilling blind obedience, blind allegiance, which are both fucked up. Obeying blindly is fucked up too. Creates unhealthy trust and unhealthy loyalty. Don't correct adults, but you can correct kids. Fucked up. Adults. Who you shot where you get played out with kids, not that way with other adults. Especially older people. Fucked up. Russians where I'll take you out. Bullshit. He's mad kids. I say that'll do what I want with my kids. Bullshit. Come here acting saying all kinds of disrespectful shit. Even if it means my kids, that's okay. No, the fuck it's not. Never the fuck is okay. Never ever. Well, us adults, we're going to cuss together, knowing that the young people nearby may be hearing us, but they can't join in with us because we control the profanity narrative hypocritically, but y'all can't do what we do. Fucked up. Very fucked up. Very, very fucked up. racist comments that blacks make to each other, us blacks make each other, fucked up. Weight discriminating that we do blacks amongst each other, fucked up. Whoopings are not an expression of love. Whoopings are not an expression of virtue. Belts, fists, switches, extension cords, threats with pots and pans, verbal lashings, all fucked up. If you got a child that you think is behaving badly, they need trained people because other parents can't help. Social services, public services, civil services, that's where they come in. Can't deal with that by yourself. And the whole, I got whooped, it turned out fine. No. Because attacking people who don't whoop their kids shows that you are child abused. And a lot of older black people don't admit how old school black culture has been hijacked, because if you make it look like you're always nice, you're not always nice to your kids. By this one question, are you nice to your kids when you whoop them? A lot of people say, well, didn't Jesus make a whip of cords? No, cells are other adults. None of the people are kids. That's because a lot of black people, especially who say they're Christian, they imagine God taking his heavenly belt from heaven and whooping their hellish asses. You're not going to whoop another adult, especially if they're abusing and being toxic and being out of pocket, being out of line. But you whoop a kid. That's fucked up. That's all fucked up. Got one more for you. This is a quote from Bernie Mac. At our house, dinners was important too. We had dinner as a family whenever possible. Everyone together, heads bowed, saying grace, adults served first. Jesus would serve children first, not adults, because children are important to adults in the mind of Jesus. That's not child supremacy. Children are more precious than adults, so adults serve, being served first, that's an example of adult supremacy and adultism. I do like this quote that he said. There is order in our house, direction and discipline, but a kid was still a kid and they respected that. The adults did not respect that I was still a kid when I was a kid. When a kid was around, he didn't discuss no adult business. When I was around, child me, adults discussed adult business. A kid didn't have to know that the bills weren't getting paid. I knew adults who had unpaid bills. Or that someone was having trouble at work. Adults used to complain to me about their work problems as a kid. And around me as a kid. Life was going to creep on that kid soon enough with all its hardships, and there was no need to hurry it along. The adults hurried it along. In fact, some adults, when I was a preteen, let me curse with them. They told me, and when I look back on it, I don't think it was the right thing. Teenage years are a little different in a sense that I can understand people like adult, teenagers and adults shouldn't cuss together. I can understand that sentiment. I have mixed feelings on it. I wasn't a typical teenager. I was quite mature. My mixed feelings are I can understand. At the same time, I could see why some people like, but you're that person's still a kid. Mixed feelings, because considering both perspectives. And both sides don't mean to be advantageous in any kind of way. Here's them tough things I had to talk about. Very rough. But it's good that I talked about them. You know? Yeah. So I'm just gonna end and say that I appreciate Christian Black people. I appreciate Black church, I do. But the Black Christians and the Black church, they were the most celebratory and defensive of the whooping practice. That's a big reason why I left Christianity, the institutional religion. I never leave the non-institutional religion, Jesus. I never leave the compassionate Nazarene.